follow your soul. I mean, just really do. I've always believed that your heart will tell you what you need to do. Your brain can inform it, but your heart will make the decision.
Awesome. And how about you, Christopher?
You know, I wouldn't really have anything to add to that. I just have the courage to follow your soul, have the courage to follow your different, have the courage to be legendary. Have the courage to be, just to be different and follow your soul, just like Heather said.
Have the courage to niche down.
Thanks for pressing play. This episode is brought to you by our good friends at GrowWire.com, featuring stories of innovation. GrowWire.com is the new digital home for people who want to grow their careers and businesses. All right, on this episode, Heather Clancy, the co-author of Niche Down, myself and Jamie J talk about how legendary people become known for a niche that they own, why it's actually time for you to niche down, and we sure hope we inspire you to follow your different.
Hello, my legendary friends. This is Legends and Losers, the show for people who like to eavesdrop on killer dialogues, brilliant rants, and crazy diversions, straight up with a business twist. Hosted by Christopher Lockhead, former three-time CMO and co-author of Play Bigger, who has one of the most strategic minds in marketing, but could also hide his own Easter eggs. And now, strap yourselves in. It's time for Legends and Losers.
All right, all right, all right. The Ramones said, hey ho, let's go. And that's what we're going to do. Welcome to this super special episode of Legends and Losers, celebrating the official launch of our new book, Niche Down. Today, I am joined by the incredible co-author of Niche Down with myself, Heather Clancy, and the new co-producer of Legends and Losers, Jamie J. I'd also like to say a big thank you to Matt Johnson from Pursuing Results. He was the founding producer of Legends and Losers. He worked with us for over a year, and he has passed the baton to Jamie. And I just want to say a public thank you to you, Matt. I love you, brother. And party on, Wayne. All right, on this episode, we go behind the music on our new book, Niche Down, How to Become Legendary by Being Different. By the time you hear this, Niche Down will either be available or very close to available. Sometimes it's a little hard to get these things exactly timed perfectly. So go to nichedownbook.com to learn how to pick up your copy if you're interested in doing that. All right, as I said off the top, this episode is sponsored by our good friends at GrowWire.com. GrowWire is the new digital home for people who want to grow their careers and their business. And it's the creation of my dear friend and Senior Vice President of Strategy and Marketing at Oracle NetSuite, Jason Maynard, as well as his partners, the amazing Susie Strutner and the incomparable Kylie Singh. And their vision was to create a platform for discussion and around growing your business and growing your career in a completely new and fun way. If you check out GrowWire, you'll see that it's a business conversation, but unlike any you've ever seen, because it's just so fun and easy to consume. The interesting thing is Heather and I have been regular contributors to GrowWire from the minute they pressed go on the website. I also want to say a big public thank you to Jason Maynard. In a very real way, Niche Down was Jason's idea. In 2017, Jason and the folks at NetSuite invited me to do a speaking tour for them, and we had a ton of fun going on the road throughout the United States and even into Canada. Canada, if you will. And while we were on the road, Jason said to me, hey, you know, Play Bigger is a great book, but it really just speaks to biggie entrepreneurs and people who are trying to build the next Facebook or Google. What about the rest of the world? You should write another book. And my first reaction was, write another book? I'd rather tear my eyeball out with a fork. Not that writing Play Bigger wasn't great. It was great. And actually, working with those three guys was one of the biggest pleasures of my life. And I'm super proud of the book we produced together. But I just couldn't wrap my head around it. However, the more Jason and I talked, and importantly as well, I was getting a lot of feedback, a lot of email, a lot of tweets, and even on the road from people saying, hey, category design is a great big idea. I love it. And how does this apply to my career? And how does this apply to me as a solopreneur, a youpreneur, or a small e entrepreneur, if you will? And so the combination of Jason sort of talking in my ear and so many people sort of requesting the same thing, it sort of became inevitable that we needed to write a book about category design for you and your life and career, as well as for small e entrepreneurs. And then I was lucky enough that the incredible, the incomparable Heather Clancy, who I have respected and admired for more years than I want to mention, said, yeah, she would do it. And once she said she would do it, that was it. So now here they are. We sort of do the behind the music on Niche Down, Heather Clancy and Jamie J.
Okay, well, I wanted to welcome you to this special episodes of Legends and Losers. And I'm super honored to be introducing two, frankly, heroes of mine personally, with the launch of the new book that we're going to be talking about today. Obviously, many of you know Christopher Lockhead and Miss Heather Clancy, the two authors of a new book called Niche Down. And it's for people like me in this entrepreneurial space. The importance of niching down is in essence the most important thing I think you need to think about. And I'm super honored to talk to Christopher and Heather today and kind of get an introspective as to what they were thinking when they wrote this. So without any further ado, please allow me to reintroduce you to my fan favorite and fanable expert, Christopher Lockhead and Miss Heather Clancy. Tell us a little bit about this, Chris.
Well, first of all, Jamie, it's awesome to have you on Legends and Losers, from behind the production of the podcast to on the podcast. And I think I have a question. I noticed that you pronounced the book Niche Down. Now, so I want to have this discussion. Is it Niche Down or Niche Down?
Oh, man. I think tomato, tomato. But I think if you're more educated or smarter, you might say me.
No, where are you from? What region? I think it has to do with where you live.
It could be, but I grew up in California mostly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now I'm out here in Missouri, so maybe that my speaking has transferred to more Missouri.
Missouri. How do you like to say it, Heather?
I'm actually surprised you don't say. You say niche.
I find myself saying niche down. I actually never decided. It just is what comes out of my mouth.
You know what, Christopher? Both of us have French in our background. I say niche as well. And we both are from, like, you lived in Montreal. I lived in Montreal kind of temporarily. So I have the feeling it has to do with, I think it's just a dialect thing.
Ah, peut-être.
Tomato, tomato.
Peut-être c'était une chose française. Patate or potatoes or peut-être or patate frites or. Jamie, have you ever been to Montreal by any chance?
I never have. And I got invited by the TSN radio announcer for the Habs to go there and watch a game. Ooh. And I haven't taken them up on it yet. And I have to do that. Exactly. But I hear it's beautiful.
Well, thinking of patates, you need to have poutine.
Oh, poutine.
It's one of the greatest
gravy,
foods.
Right? The gravy. Yeah.
Fries, pomfret frites with gravy and cheese, lots of fromage and yum, yum, yum. Yeah. Bad, but yum, yum, yum.
And you have to have it with a chien chaud steamy, which is a steamed hot dog. And if you want to go fully gourmet ding dong, you have a chien chaud Michigan, which is French for Michigan. And they put this tomato sauce with beef on top of the hot dog. And you have a couple of those and a giant bowl of poutine. Yeah, and then afterwards you have a heart attack.
But you know, there's a point to talking about Montreal, because for Christopher, I know that many of the ideas in Niche Down started in his childhood. And there is actually a great example of a business in Montreal that fits the niche of Niche Down, right? So do you want to talk about that inspiration
It's
childhood?
It's one of my favorite companies from the earliest part of my life. And we actually touched on them a little bit in Play Bigger as well. The company is called Walensky's Light Lunch. And it was started by the patriarch of the family, who's no longer with us. His name's Mo Walensky. He's a Montreal and Quebecois and Canadian legend,
in sort of a Jewish neighborhood in Montreal. And it's as old school as you could possibly imagine. It's a tiny little place. Most people just grab their food to go, but there's a small sort of counter you can sit at. They make real authentic fountain drinks. So you get like a cherry cola, and they like, there's the cola syrup and then the, and all that. And what they're famous for is this sandwich, this meat sandwich called a Wolinski special. Mm-hmm. And they make it exactly the same way every time. And they put mustard on it, not any other bullshit. And they don't cut it in half. And they squeeze it down. What are those squeezy heat thingies, those like griller things, like for a grilled cheese sandwich or whatever?
Like panini? They're like panini presses or something? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think if you called it a panini press, you'd probably get punched in the face. But
I didn't know what to say that.
But it's that. It's an old school version. Press, yeah. So the sandwich
Wolinski press.
Hot in the middle and hot on the bun. And in the old days when Mo and his wife were still around, and the kids and stuff, they would, behind the counter, they would be like arguing with each other. They'd be having like family arguments and stuff. And, you know, the service was always not service with a smile. It was like service with an edge. It was kind of like a little bit of a, you know, an edge, I guess. It was a little punk rocky feeling to me. And anyway, but with a lot of love. And yeah, the greatest meat sandwich in history.
Yeah, but the point being, and just, I think this brings it back to the book, is that in Montreal, for those of you who have never had the good fortune to have gone to that wonderful city, smoked meat is a big thing. It's like New York delis in Montreal, it's smoked meat sandwiches. And what made Wolinski's different was the way they treated it. They did it in a specific way. And they weren't like, they were just their own, they were their own thing. They were different. And that is how they distinguished themselves amongst all of those other smoked meat, because there's a, you could go to anyone. I mean, Ben's, there's a tons and tons and tons
great
of
smoked meat
restaurants that you know.
Yeah, and it's not quite smoked meat. I mean, smoked meat is sort of more like pastrami, I guess, would be the closest thing most people would know. And it's a Wolinski sandwich. I'm sure I'll get in trouble for this, but it's more like a super ding dong bologna sandwich than a smoked meat sandwich. And they make them fast. Like at lunchtime, they're just making a million of them because they know. And in February, when it's, you know, just freeze your nuts off cold, there will absolutely be a line out the door of people. And it's everybody from construction workers to investment bankers and, you know, local people in the neighborhood. And it's been on a whole bunch of those shows. I think it was on Diners, Drive-Ins and Dives, or, you know, it's that place. Right.
Yeah.
And it just, and it's its own niche, right? It centered around this experience and centered around this very distinct Wolinski special sandwich.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have a question, and I hate to detract from the story going on because it's pretty interesting. But how did you two come together on this? That's kind of interesting. I can't wait to hear this.
We're so much alike, aren't we, Heather?
Yeah, totally. I love, by the way, it's just it's weird how you say Miss Heather Clancy, because it's like, that's always been my nickname, and I've never ever told anyone that, but it just, when I meet someone, that's what they say, and that's just bizarre to me. I'm thinking, what do I do to make that be my nickname? So it's just, sorry, I totally digress, but.
No, there's something, there's something nice about the way it fits together, and it's sort of, I don't know, it makes you feel, I don't know, maybe.
Well, it's very flattering. I appreciate it. But
yeah, there's a nice ring to it.
But my husband probably doesn't appreciate it. how long have we known each other, Christopher? I was trying to figure this out. Like, when I want to say it's probably, is it 20 years or is it more than that?
It's probably, well, yeah, it would be.
About 20 years, I think.
Yeah, because it probably was at Vantive. When I was at Vantive, probably when we met, was I not?
I think it might have been Scient.
Okay, so yes, Scient was 98. So yeah, that's 20 years.
Yeah.
But the truth is, I knew you before that because, as both of you know, I got thrown out of school at 18 for being stupid and started a company. And when you have no education, you gotta self-educate. It's kind of like self-medicate, but with educate. And I used to, even though it's hard for me to read, being, you know, having dysfunction and everything, I read a lot then. I actually still read a lot. And I had to teach myself the industry. And I remember reading, remember when PC Magazine was the size of a phone book?
Remember when computer reseller news was the side of a phone book and it was weekly, not even monthly like that magazine?
Well, so yeah, that's the thing, Jamie. There was this, do you remember computer reseller news, CRN?
No.
So I was in the computer dealer channel at the time, and it was the absolute Bible. And it was, you called it a broadsheet, right, Heather? It was a big fucking thing.
It was a tabloid. Yeah. I mean, they call it a broadsheet tabloid. It was, yeah, it was like, you know, my hands are out of the screen, but there you go. You can see how big the print was. It was big news print, weekly. And we get up to like, oh, I think the biggest issue I ever put out was 666 pages. And that was a weekly. So, I mean, it was just like, just a big, it was called the Bible for, it was for the computer value added reseller and VAR and systems integrator, channel, the ones that did all the service and resold the computers into, companies, into corporates. So it was a big deal.
Back when the dealer channel was really important. It's obviously the internet made it a lot less important, and Heather, if I remember right, you used to do regular commentary, a column, and you also, of course, wrote features and did interviews and interviewed Bill Gates and, you know, all the big ding dongs. And I would read, Jamie, Heather's, particularly her sort of commentary column, religiously every single week. There was two or three people in CRN that were sort of the thought leaders, her and a couple other guys. And for whatever reason, I gravitated to Heather. And so I read her every week. And so when I met her back in, I guess, the Scient days, it was like meeting one of my heroes, because I know it sounds corny, but in a very real way, Heather was one of a few journalists who in my early career taught me the industry.
Mm. Wow.
I know, it's very flattering. I don't believe him. He's lying.
No, I'm not lying. You did. I know what you did. You wrote all those stories, and I fucking read them. So,
the good thing for you is that you say you have dysbuclia. I can't even say it. Dysbuclia. I love that word. I have sort of like disciplined ADD. Like I'm pretty focused and disciplined. Otherwise, we would never have finished this book, because you know how you are. But
God, how many times did you save this book? A billion.
But however, I do. I get bored really easily, and I want to learn more about this, and I want to learn more about that. So I do. I have to admit, I kind of write. I've been writing about a lot of different things over my life, and I'm always interested in sort of the bleeding edge or entrepreneurs, which is sort of how Christopher knew that I would be interested in this particular topic, because I've always just, anyone who innovates or somehow designs a space for themselves that is unique, I've just always admired. And when I started writing, believe it or not, like my first job was with United Press International, which really dates me. But I wrote about business for UPI, and I got involved with computer coverage at that time, just because no one else really wanted to cover it. Frankly, all the older journalists were like, flash in the pan, Compaq, you know, Microsoft, you know. So anyway, I ended up covering that beat. But I wrote about entrepreneurs for this publication called Gift Reporter that doesn't even exist anymore. So I was writing about like just all these cool boutique-y companies that were coming up and doing things and making their own space. So. Anyway, I've always been very, I guess I would say, I get bored very easily. So I kind of jump around from topic to topic, like I'm doing right now.
Well, how did you two come together for Niche Down?
For Niche Down, you mean?
Niche Down, yes.
Well, after Play Bigger came out, you know, we got tons of questions. I got tons of emails and all that stuff, which is cool. I still do, which is super cool. But the sort of number one theme that came back was, hey, how does category design apply to my career? And, you know, for those of us who are not trying to build the next Facebook or Amazon or whatever, you know, does this work for a smaller business or a youpreneur type solo business along those lines? And then my buddy Jason Maynard at NetSuite, the sponsors of Legends and Losers, check out netsuite.com/legends.
Software company.
Yeah, software company who sells software to, you know, smaller entrepreneur, growth oriented kind of businesses. Yeah. He sort of said, hey, you know, you should write a book. These people are dying to hear about this. And so he planted the seed. And then I thought, you know what? I wonder if Heather would write this with me. And I figured she'd say no. But she didn't.
I didn't. I didn't say no, although, yeah, I've never written a book before. So this, he took a big chance on me because I just haven't ever written anything this extended. But what I realized when I got contacted by him, and I think I took, what did I take, a week to get back to you, maybe?
Yeah, like you made me wait way longer than I needed to. Because I was kind of going to be fucked without you.
Oh, yeah. Well, so I had to think about it because I knew, I'll be honest with you, I've been approached by at least 5 really smart, thoughtful people from my past that have asked me to help them write a book. Or in most of the cases, it was like ghostwrite. Like, can you write this for me? You know, so it was going to be them and I was going to write. And there was something so compelling about this particular thesis. And because I knew Play Bigger, I had read it and I believed very strongly in the concepts in that book. And this spoke to me, it spoke to my soul, if you will. It just kind of was like, oh my God, yes. And I knew that I could be very helpful in finding the very real examples because Christopher's got such a great, you know, he calls himself stupid all the time, which makes me just laugh because his brain is way huger than the combined universe of marketing people I know. And I just thought, wow, this is such a profoundly unique point of view. And it's a story that needs to be told. And there's so many great examples of this thesis in process, in progress, in real life that could make it very profound. So I just, you know, we weren't going to try to write a 500 page textbook or anything like that, but it just felt like this book needed to be written and I could definitely help. So.
Well, and I'm so glad you did. You're such an incredible and compelling story writer. The book is just, do you know how many stories do we tell? Do you know, Heather?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, as I was referencing the episodes, I mean, I would say there's probably at least between 15 and 20, and there's probably more, and there's more references that we don't get into specifically, but there definitely at least that many that are referenced in the
that are
the
full
book.
On, yeah, fully blown mm-hmm. out. And mm-hmm. I was going to guess just finishing up the reading of it that, you know, some more in depth than others, but yeah, it's 15 meaty ones and maybe another 10 to 15 touches. And
yeah,
one of the big feedback points we got on Play Bigger, Jamie, was people loved the examples. And mm-hmm. so, on Niche Down, Heather and I decided to double down, so to speak, on the examples. And, mm-hmm. and the great news was we had a lot of Legends and Losers to draw on.
Right.
Right. Probably, I don't know, maybe a quarter or so of the Niche Down examples are Legends and Losers guests, plus or minus.
Well, some became guests after we found them too, actually. I mean, we kept finding these great examples and then Christopher would be like, oh, I got to interview them. So we would get all sorts of great material. So a lot more became examples in Legends and Losers episodes. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, like one of my favorites is John McDonald from Semi Handmade, mm-hmm. because this is such a great Niche Down that, you know, a lot of these companies are so, you think of the idea and you're like, ah, oh, fuck, this is so great. So I don't know, maybe we can talk about that one, for example.
You should, because I first of all, just to put it very succinctly, you know, IKEA, right? So everyone knows IKEA. I don't have any in my house. Sorry. But, because my husband's a carpenter. So I have a lot of, antiques and handmade things, but the idea behind Semi-Handmade, is that people want to pimp my IKEA. Right. So it's a way of making it, unique to a person. And, this company emerged as they actually originally were doing handmade cabinets for kitchens and so forth, and decided to instead switch to become semi-handmade. So what they do is custom, you know, and sort of unique, if you will, cabinet covers for IKEA furniture of all types. So that's the simple explanation of it.
The thing I love about it is if you're remodeling your kitchen or you're building a house or whatever, and you want something unique, you want something a little more ding-dong, but you don't want to pay the super ding-dong price, you buy the IKEA backs and the semi-handmade fronts, so to speak, and the whole world looks at your beautiful... Yeah. And you know, it's such a clever idea, right? And one of the things I loved about writing this book with you, Heather, is we were able to celebrate a lot of those from our past that we loved, you know, like Walensky's, like, what's your pizza joint called again?
Oh, Nelly's. I'm actually going there tonight. And Jamie, I don't even know outside of New Jersey how many people love thin crust pizza, but in New Jersey, pizza is, yeah, thin crust. So, you know, there's a million pizza parlors in New Jersey, but there's not that many that just specialize in thin crust. And Nelly's is one of them. There's actually kind of this big rivalry between two near me. But the point being, you know, if you're going to be a pizza parlor, why would you want to be just any other? So Nelly's is an example. It's just random that we mention in the book along the way.
You know, I have a question on that. Here we have a place called Era's Pizza, and it's phenomenal because Sarah, she goes there and eats their cauliflower crust on it real thin. Oh, she loves it. But yeah, they kind of cornered the market here on that one. But I wonder if you can maybe elaborate a little bit with as much enjoyment and awesomeness that was involved in Play Bigger. It was kind of big picture, and there's a lot of us. I'm kind of speaking selfishly, but there's a lot of us that need to understand the power of niching down, because we have a big problem. Someone asks us to do something, we're so ready and eager to say yes. We have to be so careful because that might skew a little bit outside of where our zone of genius needs to be. And that's probably one of the biggest challenges I experience, and I know a lot of others do. I wonder if maybe you can elaborate a little bit on that and maybe go into why niche down, you know, is going to be helpful for us.
Do you want to start with that, Christopher?
Why don't you go first, Heather?
Okay, so I love that question because it is, especially if you're a smaller organization like yourself, the more you do that, the less valuable you become because you are with your original business proposition, right? So it's very hard, very, very hard. I wrote this great story once called How to Fire Your Customer. And it was like, really, it's a brave thing to do. It's a very brave decision not to take that revenue, but you have to believe in your core concept, or you have to be able to walk away from something that maybe historically was working for you. I think that's a bigger problem, right? So someone will start in a place and then want and need to evolve to another place. And it's very hard to let go of that original business. This is just a general business problem at large. It's not necessarily specific to this, but the more you broaden out, the less specialized you can be at any one thing, unless you've decided to spin something out. And so generally speaking, you know, it's just a very tough decision, and you have to be disciplined about it. You have to say, you know what? There's a great example of the real estate. What's his name again?
Tim Rode.
Tim. I spaced out his name for a second. He became known for simply selling houses quickly. I am going to price this house to sell quickly. I'm going to work with you. This is the goal, to sell it within this time period. And that's it. And if you need a different service, go over here, go to my competitor, go to this person, because that's not what I specialize in. And by gosh, he became admired in the community for sticking to that. So
the other one,
no one suggests it's easy, but you have to sort of know, you have to know what you want to be. And which I think is difficult because I don't even know what I want to be.
Christopher, right before you go on, Heather, I feel like you're speaking to me because Christopher knows this. I ran a web agency for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And I actually shut down, and that was my highest income for the chaos. And here's probably something you can resonate with, but I've met so many people that says, Jamie, what the heck do you do? Mm-hmm. Because I was trying to be everything to everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Another great example I love is our friend Annie Morehouser from Annie Glass, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. She built this incredible company, very super, super niche down, high-end artisan handmade glassware for super ding-dong retailers like Neiman's and super ding-dong restaurants and hotels and shit, right? And she's in this world where her designs are very sought after. Everything she designs gets ripped off almost instantaneously. And, you know, she's had opportunities to put her shit on beach towels and fucking plastic crap. And she sort of talks about how a lot of people in that sort of high-end design niche overextend themselves and end up mm-hmm. getting real junky. And mm-hmm. and she's just said NFW to all of it. It's either on the glassware or that's it. And to your point, Jamie, I think it's hard because I'm sure if she took the idea of licensing her designs to plastic, you know, crap, she could make more money. But she made a comment. It's in the book about over diversification. She says it very eloquently. I can't remember the exact quote, but it's very powerful. And I think, and you know, maybe Heather, you can elaborate on this, but part of it comes from really having a powerful point of view that you use as your true north for yourself and your business. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. First of all, I think we should start a drinking game out of ding dong. Whenever you say ding dong.
What do we get to? Sauced. What do we get to? What do we get to?
Sauced, yeah, right.
A lot of people play a fuck drinking game with Legends or Losers.
I think ding dong is up there as well. I don't quite know what it means, but I'm getting a concept of it.
It's funny you say that, not to chase too many rabbits, but back in my old days as a CMO, of course, I spoke to the marketing team and the company on a very regular basis. And I only found out after quite some time that the marketing team always played Christopher Bingo. And they would pick a handful of words and they would count them. And if you picked the right words, I don't know what you got. But yeah, so we could play ding dong.
That's
we could play
hilarious. Christopher Bingo. So Ann Morehouser, you know, this was a really interesting example for me, Jamie, because when Christopher told me he had met her, I was like, oh my God, that's like literally was one of the first people I interviewed for this publication I mentioned a million years ago. And it was right after the Loma Prieta earthquake, because her original studio had all sorts of inventory and it was destroyed. Like the glass was just destroyed. And she had to really make a hard decision about what she wanted to be. And was she going to take out a line of credit and get all this stuff? And so that was sort of the foundation, one of the foundational, decisions for her was to stick with her craft community, approach meanwhile being in the Smithsonian, right? I think she's got like, she's in all these museums and so forth. And so it was a very conscious decision with her. It was also a personal decision, like a familial one, because she wanted to be with her children. She didn't want to be traveling to China and, you know, visiting glass companies and just talking about inventory and having to deal with all this sort of manufacturing and mass production issues that she would have had to deal with. So, there was a number of reasons she chose not to over diversify. Those were a couple of them. And plus, P.S., she is like she's an artist. So she is driven by understanding the next big technique. She has guest artists come into her studio that have nothing to do with glass, that have other mediums that they work in, so she can learn new things. And you can't do that if you're beholden to some production company's supply chain standards or have to make trade-offs about the quality of things because you want to mass produce. So there were so many reasons that she chose to do what she did.
The other thing, and I'm so glad we did it a lot of the examples in the book have that element, which is there's the business things around niching down, having a point of view, all the good stuff. Mm-hmm. But we were able, and I give you all the credit in the world, Heather, to capture the human being. You know, so if you think about Debbie Sterling, by way of example, the founder of Goldieblocks, right? You capture her, that, you know, what Eddie Yuen calls that missionary zeal to bring science, technology, engineering, and math toys to girls. Mm-hmm. And so there's a human, there's a personal, it was because that was her vocation, and there was nothing for her as a young girl when she became, you know, a Stanford graduate and so forth. She wanted to fix the problem that there were no STEM toys for girls. And so I guess my point is, I love that we've tried to capture the human drive to do things in business, as opposed to, I think, a lot of business books where they're just sort of very profit or EBITDA or whatever oriented.
My favorite example, Christopher, is John's crazy socks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just the, I'm getting choked up. But the story of this young man with Down syndrome who had all his life loved just muddy socks. He just was his thing. And he took class in his school about entrepreneurship and went to his father and said, "Dad, you know, I want to do this." And his father said, "You know what? Yes, this is a great idea." And they designed this niche that no one else can own. I mean, it's so particular and personal. And you know, I just, so that obviously is a family business, and they started the business with the notion that it was going to be structured in a certain way, that John was the face of the company because that was who it needed to be, that they were going to immediately put a certain amount of the profits over to different foundations, obviously focused on learning disabilities and so forth. And then the brilliance of the marketing, and I'm going to let you talk about this, Christopher, because that is just awesome. how they connected.
They're so opportunistic in, you know, we talk about it in the book, in creating their own lightning strikes, right? Mm-hmm. Where they find out that George H.W. Bush loves snazzy jazzy socks, and so does Clinton. And so they send both of them the socks. And before you know it, they're tweeting about it. And then it gets really incredibly emotionally powerful because John's Crazy Socks had designed a sock. I actually have a pair myself that have like library books on them. And George H.W. decides to wear those socks to Barbara Bush's funeral in honor of her because of her commitment to lifelong commitment to literacy. I'm going to start crying. and by the way, as a side note, I cried when we shot the show. I cried when we edited that episode, and I cried when it came out and I listened to it again. So John and Mark were so smart that after all that happened, they turned that sock into their literacy charity sock, and they now donate the profits from that sock to her foundation. And so, you know, that's a big part of it. But you know, the other part of it I love about that story, and this is a big theme in the book, and I'm so glad, Heather, we captured it. Most of us, most of our lives get taught to fit in.
Right.
And many of us, particularly those of us who are more creative, who are more entrepreneurial, we don't fit in. And so we make this distinction between finding your place in the world, and you know, if you're somebody who finds your place, God bless you, versus making your place in the world. And many of us who feel like misfits have to make our place in the world because there isn't one. And in that context, John and Mark stand out to me because, and we talked about this when they were on Legends and Losers, we underscore it in the book. If you look at John having Down syndrome, many people would look at that as a liability. Many mm-hmm. people would look at that difference as a bad thing. And they, you know, to use our phrase, follow your different, they followed his different, his passion for creativity and jazzy socks, and they decided to nurture and love and amplify that and to use the thing that makes John different as an asset, not a liability, and anchor the business to it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't want to, fuck it, I will sound overly corny. If there's a more inspirational niche down, if there's a more inspirational entrepreneurial story, and if there's a more inspirational story about one making their place in the world than what John and Mark have done, I can't think of it.
I can't think of it either. I mean, I have, when that example came to my attention, it just really brought it home for me because it's not about being like, they're doing really well, P.S., but that wasn't the reason that they started the business. I mean, certainly you don't want to start a business to lose money, but that wasn't the point. The point was to establish this mission. They had a mission in many ways.
You know what I like about it is that story in particular, and I think I told you this, Christopher, I don't know if I did or not, but one of the biggest parts I took out of that was, and I hate to use this word because so many people throw it around, but it was very authentic. And, you know, his dad just, he's another person. There is no coddling. It's just like they're riffing back and forth and you're just like, this is amazing. Like it was just, and I think that aspect of, you know, niching down is... Yeah. That's what was inspiring for me. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they inspire me, you know, to have the courage to follow your different, to double down on that different, to create a unique place in the world. And if you do it, and to the point on lightning strikes and sending socks to presidents and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau in Canada, they have a Justin Trudeau sock, which I actually got and gave to my dad, Bruce, because my dad, Bruce, was who discovered them for me. So Bruce now has the... Justin Trudeau socks that I got from them. And the other thing, as a side note, so much fell in love with them. We ordered 120 custom Legends and Losers John's Crazy Socks. And we're going to be giving them away. We'll figure out what the right giveaway is to people who purchase Niche Down, but we're going to give away a bunch of the Legends and Losers John's Crazy Socks, and they're great. They're black and pink, and they're very fun. I can't stop wearing them.
Well, it's too warm to wear them right now in New Jersey, but...
I have a question, and I hate to segue away again. Well, actually, I kind of enjoy this, but... how did the conversation go between the two of you to select the title?
Oh... God, I'm like blanking out on this one. I mean, it was pretty, it's interesting. We went back and forth very, that was one thing I was worried about when I said yes. I was like, how the heck is this going to work? Like, am I going to write and then he's going to riff on that? Or is he going to riff and then I'm going to write, you know? And for some reason, I didn't really think about it all that much. We just started doing it and like it worked. Niche Down, we kind of debated. I mean, I'll have to say, Christopher, this was in his body, and I believe the title started with him. I think I really contributed the most on the subtitle, you know, how to be legendary by being different, you know, and not. But the Niche Down, the idea that you just had to hunker down and do it. I loved that the imagery that I got out of that. But I'm pretty sure that you originally came up with that, Christopher.
This is going to sound nuts, but that was too many scotches ago. I don't remember exactly where Niche Down came from. I remember distinctly, to your point, Heather, lots of discussion and debate between us on what the subtitle should be.
Yeah, we had a whole bunch of them. Subtitle was really hard, actually.
Yeah, and we brainstormed different approaches and ideas, mm-hmm. and I'm so glad we landed where we landed on the subtitle. The title of the book was always clear to me. I can't even tell you why. That just had to be the title.
Was it title first, then content? Or did you have another working title and then came up with that content?
No, I think the word niche was out there. Like when the original idea, we talking about finding your niche. I think that was originally one of the things we were debating. I also think that in some regards, and I don't know, maybe I'm speaking out of turn here, Christopher, but the idea of play bigger, you know, how do you play bigger? You play it bigger by really niching down into your space. And so I think the word, we talked about the concept of niching down a lot before the Niche Down title came in. And I think that was just like all of a sudden Christopher's like, oh, this is the title, Niche Down, you know, just boom, do it. So because niche could be a verb or a noun, right? So in this context, it's like niche down, just do it, damn it. Or it's, how did they do it? Niche down, they did it. So I mean, it's it just worked in so many different ways. That
well, and then just, yeah. After that, it was like, in some ways, niche down is the opposite of play bigger, right? Because mm-hmm. play bigger is about how do we build the next Google. And so there was a sort of interesting symmetry in my head to, you're actually not playing bigger. You're niching down. You're playing smaller, right?
mm-hmm. But so, you could be big by playing small. You know what I'm saying? It's just...
Well, one of the great stories, another one, our friend Groover, Jen Groover, right? Why don't you tell that story? Because I love this one. She was also on Legends and Losers. She's an unbelievable entrepreneur.
So she was the one that, for those of the male persuasion in the audience, Jen is the inventor of this awesome bag. If you've ever seen your wife or your girlfriend or your whatever, digging around in a handbag for stuff. This she came up with the idea. That was sort of her start of this this way of just read a bit, but you know, an organizational product was her original idea.
Yeah, and the butler bag.
Pardon me?
The butler bag, she calls it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, so it just became this, and that sort of became what she where she started, but she became this brand beyond that, like way beyond that. And you understand that better than I do, because I've never been very good at branding myself. You know that, Christopher, you're always on my case for that. But that's what made her really compelling. She just, by being that specific about what she all of a sudden became bigger. She became a design guru. She had a show, you know, she...
Clothing lines, a kid's clothing line.
She didn't over diversify, but she did extend herself into other areas by being that small, like unlike Anne.
Well, and one of the things we tease out is exactly this concept, Jamie, which there's this weird dichotomy or almost irony in life where you have to, if you'll allow me all the jargon, niche down to play bigger, right? You become known for something super narrow. And then from there, you become valued and trusted and respected, and it allows you to open the aperture and play a little more broadly if you want to.
But it all points back to that original niche.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, the mantra of being known for a niche that you own, right? Mm-hmm. It goes back to what's that one thing you're known for, right? And what's the celebration of your different? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and it one of the big things we tease out is, niching down creates or designs the category which creates demand that wasn't there. And a big mistake that a lot of entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, individuals in our careers, you know, we fall into the trap of competing on a dimension of, well, we're better, you know, we taste better. The butler bag is better than a traditional purse, as opposed to it's different. It's a new type of purse, right? And that, you know, Spinal Tap says that there's such a fine line between clever and stupid, right? That shift of it's not a better purse, it's a different, it's a new niche of purse, opens people up to a new way to think about a problem and a solution. And it's that focusing on that different and having the courage to step into a niche that doesn't exist so that you can create demand where none existed, as opposed to fall into the legacy marketing trap, which is to try to capture existing demand, which by definition was designed by somebody else and therefore is a game you can't play. That's a big set of ideas for people to wrap their heads around.
I love that. I guess we're coming kind of to the point of, I would like to know, well, I kind of do, if I'm kind of clear on this, how do I get the book? How do I get it?
You know, because we're making you tell everyone.
Well, the best thing they can do, Jamie, is go to a website designed by a very good friend of ours named Jamie J, nichedownbook.com. Mm-hmm. And we have a bunch of Scooby snacks there, right, Heather? We spend a lot of time working on the Scooby snacks.
Scooby snacks. Yeah, you spend a lot of time working on the Scooby snacks.
Well, you did too. And so we're launching exclusively on Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. You go to nichedown.com. We'll bring you exactly to the spot on Amazon to pick up a copy. And then if you do pick up a copy, there's a bunch of Scooby snacks we'll give you, including some incredible transcripts from Legends and Losers. Uh-huh. Heather and I are going to be doing a Q&A session with Niche Down readers a little bit later on, probably in the August, September timeframe. And so you'll be able to join us and ask us questions. And
Christopher is reading the book. The voice of Christopher is the voice of Niche Down. So it's a labor of love, and God bless you for doing it, buddy.
Well, thank you.
You get an audio book too. You get to hear Christopher, and Christopher only swears when I wrote the swear words. So you can't count the words.
But how hard was it to stay just reading and not do any elaboration?
Oh, fuck. So hard. I just wanted to say all kinds of additional stuff, like, isn't that awesome? Or, hey, just so you know, Heather wrote that, not me. That's the thing I most wanted to say. Anything that sounds smart in the book, it's what Heather wrote.
No.
And
what I love is you can't tell most of the time who wrote
it. And actually, you know, that's the amazing thing about a collaboration. People have asked me, well, so how did you guys write this book together? And
weird. I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, I can sort of answer. I could give you an answer to the question, but I don't know either, Heather. Can you really unpack how we did it? I'm not quite sure.
I got to be honest with you. No, I just really, I've said it before. I did not expect it to go as smoothly as it did. We had more, if you're ever publishing a book, guys, the back end stuff is nightmarish. Writing it is cool. Writing it is fun. It's all the other stuff, all the finalizing stuff. But in all seriousness, it was just, I would say that we had probably 4 to 5 drafts on each chapter, maybe, right? Something like that. It seemed to be the average. And I would spit something out, then you would spit something back, and then we'd spit at each other for a while, and then all of a sudden it would be there. So that's kind of how it worked. And it was pretty quick.
Yeah. And I loved how.
Oh man, we started on this back in January, really.
Yeah.
But the writing really started in February.
February.
Yeah.
The other thing I loved is how you and I just found all the great entrepreneurs. You know, some were people you had relationships with and covered for a long time. Some were people who I knew and or had been on Legends and Losers. And then some we just bumped into serendipitously, like, you know, John at Semi Handmade or... and some were companies, like, for example, that I admired for a long time, like the Shot Leather Jacket folks, you know, one of the most iconic brands and products and companies in American history. And I've always wanted to figure out a way to talk about and celebrate them. And then
TerraCycle.
TerraCycle. And, and then the other thing I have to say, you know, my first book I wrote with three dudes, and this may be a sort of funny thing to say, but it is different writing a guy and a gal, don't you think?
Well, I don't know, because I never wrote with a gal or a guy before, so I really don't have a good frame of reference. But
well, what was it like for you collaborating? Because most of the stuff you write on your own.
That was different, absolutely, but it didn't feel intrusive. I was worried it might be intrusive, and it didn't feel. It just felt like I was really what I was trying to do was channel your voice a lot of the time anyway. You know, because so many of these concepts are embodied in your soul, and I was just really trying to pull them out. So that's a lot of what I do anyway. I consider it I can call myself a translator. And I've used that in my job description for a long time, because I've always been focused on translating very technical concepts into something that the average human can get their arms around. And so I feel like that kind of prepared me for just trying to pull the ideas out.
I agree with you about that, I do want to push on you a little bit, because you're so much in this book, like your soul's in this book too. There's so much, like, and not just being a great writer. I mean, there's so many awesome turn of phrases in the book, if that's even a phrase. Like you have such a, not to be cliched, but a way with words, but there's a lot of your soul. Like I feel you, it sounds corny, I know, but I feel you in this book. Like you're, no, you, it's not like, I don't,
No,
you,
I get
you
it.
Didn't just, you weren't just capturing, you know, my thoughts or voice at all. There's so much you somehow, there's so much of you in it. And I can't, there's sort of a, it may sound overly corny, but there's a real blurring, right? There, it's a classic stew or melange, right?
Going back to the French.
Yeah. And that's, well, I think, probably the thing I'm most proud of, Jamie, is I really, really, truly in my heart feel like this is our book. I love to see the cover of the book with both our names on it. I love, you know, Heather's dedication in the book, because you don't write that kind of dedication unless you feel like it's your book. Unless, like, I know you put your soul in this book, Heather. And I will always, I mean, I loved you before. And man, I will always love you for this. And the biggest bummer of this whole thing is we're not writing it anymore. Ending it was the worst part.
There you go. There you have it, Jamie.
Yeah. And to wrap up this episode, I just wanted to see you, first, Miss Heather, it's okay I call you that. What would you say as a departing words of wisdom for the niche down, for people that, you know, are going to go out and buy the book?
Oh boy. Didn't prep for this one. Follow your soul. I mean, just really do. I've always believed that your heart will tell you what you need to do. Your brain can inform it, but your heart will make the decision.
That's awesome. And how about you, Christopher?
You know, I wouldn't really have anything to add to that. Just have the courage to follow your soul. Have the courage to follow your different. Have the courage to be legendary. Have the courage to be, just to be different and follow your soul, just like Heather said.
Have the courage to niche down.
Absolutely.
Double
love
to you.
I guess the only other thing I'd say is my deepest, sincerest hope, Jamie, and I know I speak for Heather on this too, is I hope people love reading this book or listening to this book as much as we loved writing it, because writing this book with the legendary Heather Clancy, when you put me in a box and throw dirt on my face, is going to be one of the most proud things I was ever associated with.
Oh, I'm blushing. Thank you, Christopher.
It's true, my love. Yeah.
Well, it's been an honor chatting with the both of you, and I'm super pumped to get the book, not only for me, but our entire staff is excited for this thing to come out. So kudos. And thank you so much for delivering awesomeness into the world.
Thank you.
It's pretty amazing.
Thanks, Jamie. Thanks, Heather.
Thank you.
Oh, it's nichedownbook.com.
Exactly. Be legendary, my friends. Whew. Thanks for tuning in for that episode. Great conversation. Lots of fun. You could tell lots of love in the air amongst the three of us. And if you know somebody who would love this conversation about how Niche Down came to be, why not share it with them right now? And if you got value from that conversation, we would love your review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you experience Legends and Losers. Also want to underscore, Legends and Losers is available to you now on Spotify. Yeah, so we know a lot of people actually delete the bigger name podcast players on their phones, and they've really migrated to Spotify for everything. So if you're a Spotify person, check out Legends and Losers on Spotify. All right, we would like to thank GrowWire.com, the new digital home for people who want to grow their careers and businesses. Check out GrowWire.com. And of course, our good friends at NetSuite, the platform for growth from the garage to the IPO and beyond. If you want to turbocharge your growth, go to netsuite.com/legends to get your free 1-hour consultation with a growth expert in your industry. That's netsuite.com/legends. The new book by Heather Clancy and myself, Niche Down, How to Become Legendary by Being Different. Check out nichedownbook.com. And speaking of inspiring entrepreneurs around the world, check out Kiva, KIVA.org. They're a nonprofit making a difference to entrepreneurs in the developing world and beyond with your microfinance loans. Check out Kiva.org.
All right. I need to remind you that this oddcast is a sole property of the Legends and Losers Oddcast Network, and we'd love it if you shared the shit out of it. We really appreciate you sharing Legends and Losers with your friends, telling people about us, and so forth. All rights do remain disturbed. This oddcast was clearly produced in a studio that does contain nuts. Don't forget the famous words of David Lee Roth. Hey, man, that suit is you. In the event of business bullshit, take two Legends and Losers and tweet us in the morning. Never jog near a prison. Support your local entrepreneurs. Watch out for Putin. Scotch, it's not just for lunch anymore. Thank you, Dandy Candy. I love you, Mom and Dad. And hey, Colin, this oddcast really ties the room together, doesn't it? Today, our deepest apologies go to Marcus Rust, CEO of Roseacre Farms. Sorry, Marcus, we just ran out of time for you. That's it, my friends. Thank you so much for investing your life with us, and we'll look forward to seeing you again soon on Legends and Losers.